Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. American Independence, today on Advanced. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Simon, and you are joining both myself and my co-host Linda C. in the studio today as we continue our discussion on the spirit of 1776. Now, Linda, you described this eloquently yesterday. What is the spirit of 1776?
Well, it is that independence that Americans had to fight for their freedom, fight for their independence from Great Britain, and declaring independence.
The emerging of a unique American worldview, maybe. Set of values, if you will. Yeah. Our subtitle is probably more informative to those of you who have your magazine. The subtitle here for the two-day lesson, we're doing the second part today, is the 250th anniversary of the United States, which of course is 2026, has inspired a film and a book. Yesterday we looked at the film. Today we are looking at the book, right?
We are.
All right. Now, we have sort of a provocative, meaning an inflammatory title, a controversial title for this lesson that I think our editorial team has created, right?
Yes, that is World War 0.5 with a question mark. So there is no World War 0.5. We only know World War II, World War One, and it wasn't even World War II, and sorry, World War One before World War II came around. It was just the Great War.
That's true. That's true. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. So what is this?
Well, let's talk about this 0.5 business and how you say it. Like, why is the zero even there? I would say the zero is there largely because of style guides, right? But the reason they've chosen to write the zero before the point is because it's very easy to miss the point if you're not looking carefully. And then you would just say World War V. And you were like, what happened to 3 and 4, you might say. But 0.5, what they're basically trying to say here is the World War before the First World War.
Yeah, the pre-World War.
Now, it's interesting because this is not an idea that is unique to our advanced editorial staff. Like, I grew up being told that the real First World War was the Napoleonic Wars, which were sort of like the very late 1700s, the early 1800s, up to about 1815, maybe, 1801, 1803 to 1815, something like that. That kind of period. But that's not the American Revolution. But the idea here that is being placed on this is that a war like the American War of Independence, now, I don't know if they've noticed, we've used two different names for this war already. Americans tend to call it the War of Independence. People who are from, you know, British colonial historical areas, the Commonwealth, tend to call it the Revolutionary War.
We use both.
But it's the same thing. It's the same thing. The point being, a war like that doesn't happen in isolation.
Right.
Right? It plays out with global implications.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the idea.
Are you to say that no war is isolated? It affects multiple nations.
Well, the American War of Independence sort of is an outgrowth in some ways of a war called the Seven Years' War, which was also a major global conflict, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess you could say there have been many world wars, or a few of them anyway. And this is a pre-World War I world war we're kind of talking about. And this is an idea that is represented in the book that we've been talking about. Over the 2 days, we're talking about a film and a book. This idea that there were global implications or effects of this is what the book is really all about. So we're basically going to be discussing this book today. It's kind of a book review. We're going to do it in two readings. Listeners, if you have your Advanced magazine, I would encourage you to open it up. This is the July magazine, of course, and we're looking at the history article, the second day of the history article. If you don't have your magazine, I would encourage you to pause this program, run out and get one, because it's the easiest way to support us here at Advanced Radio. All right. I'm ready, Linda. Are you ready?
I am.
Let's do the first of our two readings.
Let's do it. World War 0.5. This July marks 250 years since a handful of upstart American colonies declared independence from Britain. A war was fought, as we all know, and almost immediately after it was over, historian Richard Bell asserts in his book, The American Revolution and the Fate of the World, a collective amnesia took hold. The preference for historians and Americans alike was to tell a simple story, one in which plucky homegrown heroes faced down all the king's horses and all the king's men, all on their own. The truth is, Bell says, the country's founding required a world war in all but name. The transnational nature of the conflict can't be understated, he goes on. Its reach was felt far and wide, so much so that it is not an exaggeration to say that the American Revolution set much of the world as we know it in motion, to the delight of some and the horror of others, namely indigenous and enslaved peoples.
All right. Now, we did note this yesterday, but it wasn't noted in the article. For Americans, and maybe for non-Americans who like America, this is a special year, isn't it, Linda?
It is, yes.
Tells us right at the beginning, why is it a special year?
Because it is the 250th anniversary of American independence.
I suppose one might say that it's a very American thing to celebrate the 50th anniversary. I mean, I can understand 100, 200, 300, 250 seems a little much. How many times do we need to celebrate this? Every year, I suppose.
I mean, half century is pretty significant.
I mean, if it's a birthday, it's a big one. If it's a country, I guess you could argue that.
I guess since the U.S. is still a relatively young country. You know.
Anything to celebrate. Mm-hmm. Barbecue, fireworks, parades. Mm-hmm. We love them. Okay. So this July marks 250 years since a handful of upstart American colonies declared independence from Britain. So, you know, we know colonies, mm-hmm. right? We know they're in America. Yesterday we discussed how the upstart colonies were not the only colonies, but it is important to know what upstarts are.
And
what
I like
are upstarts?
How they've used this word upstart to describe the American colonies. So an upstart, like you would describe like this punk kid who's like so overconfident, they're so full of themselves, they think very highly of themselves. And here it's used to describe the American colonies who, they were young, they wanted to have independence, and so they had all of this courage, all of this confidence to do that.
Yeah. It's sort of a young person who is disruptive to an organization or sort of a power system, right? But I think it's important to note here that when the writer says this, if you describe someone as an upstart, frequently it's kind of negative.
Right.
But the person here is speaking, like I would describe this using the idiom tongue-in-cheek.
Mm-hmm.
You know what tongue-in-cheek means? It means you're saying it, but you're saying it kind of sarcastically, like it's not
in a
serious,
playful way.
Yeah.
Here it is, I think he's using it in a positive way, like because these American colonies needed to have this spirit, like we see in the title, this independent spirit, this overconfidence to break free from Britain, the British Empire.
So nonetheless, these troublemakers declared independence from Britain. A war was fought, and as we all know, and almost immediately after it was over, as Richard Bell, this historian, asserts, a collective amnesia took hold. Amnesia is kind of like a medical condition where you hit your head and then forget who you are and stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, you don't necessarily have to hit your head, but you just lose all of your memory. You forget. And
I'll be honest with you. I'm not American, but I don't think Americans have forgotten about the War of Independence at all. I think they're super obsessed with the storyline and George Washington and, you know, American history, right?
Yeah, not that the event did not take place.
Who is forgetting? I mean, it's collective, which means like everybody forgot.
Yes, just what it involved, what it entailed. Not that the event didn't take place, but what actually happened during the American Revolution.
Okay, so they're not forgetting the revolution or the Declaration of Independence. They're forgetting the real detailed story.
Yeah, and the repercussions from that.
And that's actually what they go on to say in the next paragraph. They say the preference for historians and Americans alike, so this is what people liked to do, what they preferred to do, was to tell a simple story. And what makes it simple there? What happens in that simple story?
Well, these
look at the language here.
Plucky, homegrown heroes face down all the king's horses and all the king's men, all on their own. Mm. So this is referring back to this description of upstart American colonies. Plucky is when you just have also a lot of confidence, like you're very...
It's like David and Goliath.
Brave,
the little
yes.
guy who won't give up, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
And homegrown, these are Americans that are born and raised on U.S. soil, or was in the U.S. then, but on the colony soil. Mm-hmm. And so they faced down, they confronted directly the British Empire, represented by all the king's horses and all the king's men. And that's from a nursery rhyme,
right? That's right. Yeah. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty mm-hmm. Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again.
Right.
So it's just a way of saying, you know, the resources of the empire,
mm-hmm.
right?
Which
or the king.
Which was vast.
Which represents Britain. And yeah, so, it was the superpower of the time, right?
Yes, they owned the majority of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so these little homegrown heroes, like they were brave enough to face down, to take on the British Empire all on their own.
So
but that's the simple story.
That's the simple story, that they faced them down through pluck. So through courage and confidence, they stared the British Empire in the eye until the British gave up. But that's not what happened at all. It was actually a world war
right.
in all but name. Now, when something is in all but name, it basically means we're just not calling it that, but
mm-hmm.
that's what it is,
mm-hmm.
right?
So it was actually transnational, so that in the next paragraph.
You know, I always read that as transitional. When I look at that word, I always think it says transitional, which means like changing in the middle of change. But transnational is something very different. What's transnational?
Right. That involves more than one country. So
yeah.
The nature of this conflict was transnational, involving multiple countries. And this was understated, according to Richard Bell.
So if you're talking about a transnational conflict, you're basically talking about like ships fighting on the oceans all around the world and small battles erupting in different places, right? That aren't in the country where the war is happening. Yeah. So other countries being drawn in. And basically, you can't understate the transnational nature of this war. So you can't, you know, you can't, what would you say? Overemphasize
mm-hmm.
how important the role of other countries were in this conflict, or at least battles going on in other places. It was not just a war that was limited to the United States itself. It says its reach was felt far and wide, so much so that it is not an exaggeration to say the American Revolution set much of the world as we know it in motion. So far and wide basically means far from the place where it was happening.
Yeah, far-reaching.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Not an exaggeration to say the American Revolution set much of the world as we know it in motion. There are a few examples of this that were sort of taught in American history class. As a Canadian, I had to take American history once, and I learned that the French Revolution was inspired by the American Revolution, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And the American Revolution set off a series of independence movements over the next 100 years that were sort of inspired. I learned things like, even the North in the Vietnam War was sort of driven by a desire for independence of a colony, and they were inspired by the American Declaration of Independence and things like that. So wide-ranging effects. Mm-hmm. Tells us here that basically this is to the delight of some and the horror of others, namely indigenous and enslaved peoples.
Yeah.
Delight of some, horror of others. What's that mean?
Well, like you mentioned, for it gave courage or inspiration to other colonies or other places that wanted to declare independence. But at the same time, it was to the great disadvantage of indigenous peoples and indigenous.
So that phrase there is a little confusing because I read it as some indigenous and enslaved peoples were delighted by the ideas that came out of this and others were not. Am I completely wrong about that? You just hadn't thought about that?
I didn't see it that way. I thought the second part was just giving examples of the horror.
See, I think of things like in America, a whole series, in the Americas, meaning like South and Central America, a whole series of revolutions basically kicked off following the American Revolution, right? Like a lot of those countries became independent, and they were not primarily like European populations. Like they were often like native populations or slave populations or things
true.
Like that.
Yes, you could see it.
So
that
I feel
way
like
too.
They were kind of inspired. I guess the point being here, the language is not super clear on what they mean. So I have interpreted it one way. Mm-hmm. Linda has interpreted it the other. You listeners are free to interpret it however you want. Let's get into the next reading and find out if there's any more clarity coming our way.
Big pictures and little pictures. To get that immensity, Bell advances 7 core arguments that encompass migration, the war's human cost, the improbability of its outcome, naval power, trade, imperial crackdowns in other colonies, and the spread of liberty. He then filters it through individual experience. Molly Brandt, for instance, a Mohawk woman who worked as a broker, spy, and refugee camp coordinator. It's a crackerjack way to illustrate the heart of the conflict and its scope. Bell sometimes strains to make revolutionary connections, most particularly in the implication that America's refusal to allow Britain to send homegrown prisoners to its shores was the reason Australia became a penal colony. The truth, Bell does admit, is that none of Britain's colonies wanted its prisoners, the number of which had reached critical proportions. Despite that, Bell, who is British by birth but an American by choice, is an apt guide for readers revisiting the shot heard round the world and its ramifications.
Okay, so our reading here begins with to get at that immensity. Now, when something is immense, it means it's very big. Mm-hmm. So when you're getting at it here, basically what they're saying is to gain an understanding of how large the effects of this war of independence were, what do you have to do? Well, you have to look at these 7 core arguments that are being advanced by this historian, Bell. Now, when we say advanced, we're not talking about our magazine here. We're talking about promoted or suggested or, you know, shared. Basically, these 7 core arguments. What do they encompass, Linda?
Migration, the war's human cost, the improbability of the war's outcome, naval power, trade, imperial crackdowns in other colonies, and the spread of liberty.
Now, wait a minute. I counted 12 there. I'm just kidding. We always have problems with these lists as a staff figuring out which ones are which, but this is a remarkably clear list. So the effects include migration, meaning as a result of the war, people moved from one place to another. I'm from Ontario in Canada, which basically became a thing because people were fleeing from the American Revolution. So people were moving as a result of this conflict, and that had effects. What were some of the others there? The human cost.
Well, yeah, war. There's always
people
a human
die,
toll. Yeah.
People lose their homes, you know, mm-hmm. things like that. The improbability of its outcome. It wasn't immediately clear that these colonies were going to beat Britain in the conflict, right? Right? Naval power. So it had effects on, you know, who was sort of policing the world's oceans. It had effects on trade.
Yep,
so
definitely.
Which countries were trading with who? You know, in particular, Britain had been the destination of a lot of American resources, and that was probably disrupted as a result of the conflict. Imperial crackdowns in other colonies. Now, imperial here refers to an empire.
The British Empire.
So the British Empire. And crackdowns?
So they would want to get stricter in other colonies because they didn't want them to replicate what America had done to break free, because they still wanted their resources and all of the positive things that the colonies brought in. So they would probably try to prevent any revolutions in their other colonies.
Okay. And the spread of liberty. Now, here in particular, I think we're mostly talking about the ideas associated with liberty, like the rights of individuals, which had been around in academic literature for quite a while before that time. But, you know, it was a totally different thing to see it come into reality.
Yeah. And that's probably, this last one is probably what the American Revolution most strongly represents. Like, we talked about this collective amnesia taking over, but that is the one thing that would probably stand out on the list. Like, people didn't forget about that.
Okay. So basically, this is all told through a series of characters. He gives an example here, Molly Brandt, a Mohawk woman. Mohawk are a tribe of Native Americans that belong to a group called the Iroquois, and they sided with the British and ended up, in many cases, in Ontario, the part of Canada I'm from. She worked as a broker, a spy, and a refugee camp coordinator. So she was involved in the buying and selling of things. She was spying on people, and she was basically dealing with people who were moving as a result of the war, those refugees. And it says it's a crackerjack way to illustrate the heart of the conflict and its scope. Linda, I'll let you deal with crackerjack because,
well, when I see the word crackerjack, I think of, well, it would be capital C and then capital J.
Are we talking about the snack here?
Yes.
Because that's what I think of,
because,
too.
Because, yeah, it was this popcorn that we would eat as kids.
Yeah, candied popcorn.
Yes.
That came like in boxes.
Caramelized popcorn.
With a little toy in it.
Yeah.
A little
and
prize.
So,
yeah.
When I hear crackerjack, that's what I think of, this snack. But crackerjack, the adjective, means of the highest quality, the best. So this is the best way to illustrate what was happening at the heart of the conflict. And
presumably they were saying it was the best snack, right?
I guess so. Yes, yeah. Crackerjack.
It had the mascot or the character on the box was a sailor. And
an
old term for sailors was jack, a jack tar or a jack. And so presumably, this is like the highest quality sailor.
Okay.
A cracker jack. I don't know.
So many associations, because I think of Jack in the Box.
Oh.
I'm thinking of that as the,
that's
as the logo.
It's a toy in a box where you turn a little handle and it plays a song, and then this clown, clown pops out to terrify children and prepare them for the harshness of life.
But the same colors, red, white, and blue, basically, right? The cracker jack colors.
Our reading continues on to say Bell, who is the writer, sometimes strains to make revolutionary connections, most particularly in the implication that America's refusal to allow Britain to send homegrown prisoners to its shore was the reason Australia became a penal colony. Now, when you're straining, you know, like in the gym, it means you're really working your muscles. Here, the way I understand this is it means the connection is not really clear.
Right.
It's not a concrete clear. Like, it's hard to say that Britain sent prisoners to Australia just because it couldn't send them to America, right?
Right. He's really working to make that connection.
Nonetheless, they use this word here, penal colony. I think, well, within the English-speaking world, this is what we think of when we think of Australia, a place where they sent prisoners, convicted felons, right?
Yeah. I mean, originally, that's how Australia got inhabited with people from...
It's a colony. It's penal, Britain. So it's for punishment, like a jail, if you will. The truth, Bell does admit, is that none of Britain's colonies wanted its prisoners, the number of which had reached critical proportions. Okay, so, you know, it's not a perfect narrative here in the story, but it's pretty good, pretty good. Despite that, Bell, who is British by birth but an American by choice, is an apt guide for readers. Okay, what does this mean? British by birth, American by choice.
So he was born, although born in the UK, so he is British, but he's become a naturalized
American citizen. American. Because you can't choose where you're born, right? So your original citizenship by birth, that's your parents' choice or, you know, the result of circumstance. That's not your choice. But he has then chosen to become American.
And I imagine he probably maintains his British citizenship, so he probably has dual citizenship.
I feel like you have to give it up.
No.
You don't?
You
would know more about this than I do, but...
Yes, I would.
You know, yeah.
Because you can keep your nationality of birth to become a naturalized American citizen.
Okay.
But if you choose to become a citizen of another country, then you have to give up your citizenship.
So Americans can't become dual citizens. But if you're born with a different citizenship, you can acquire American citizenship.
Yes. Or if you have some connection, let's say you can get citizenship to France through a grandparent or a parent or a family connection, then that's okay. Then you can have dual.
Okay. So nonetheless, this Bell person is an apt guide, which means an ideal person, presumably because he has understanding of both the British perspective and the American perspective here. And so he's revisiting the shot heard round the world and its ramifications. Now, what is this shot heard around the world?
Well, that is what...
It's in quotes.
...started the American Revolution.
Is that the shot at Concord? Oh, we're testing America.
Americans
know their own history?
It took place.
Yeah, the first battle of the Revolutionary War was a battle. It was kind of a running battle at two spots, Lexington and Concord, right? But I think they started shooting it in Concord, Massachusetts. So I think that was the shot.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the first gunshot of the American Revolution had effects all around the world.
Yes.
Listeners, thank you so much for joining us for our celebration of American independence. We hope you'll join us again soon for another Advanced. Until then, I'm Simon.
I'm Linda.
Saying bye for now.
Goodbye.